in association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Welcome again for more tales from the blue carpet at the New York Comic Con from 2009. On this edition, we'll be talking with some more creators. It is the audio from my Newsarama video interviews. Brian Michael Bendis will be around to talk about his announcements. Sean McKeever talks about the upcoming Teen Titans, Titans Vigilante crossover. He's co-writing with Marv Wolfman. Writer-editor of Dark Horse, Scott Alley, gives us the lowdown on the Buffy books and the Robert E. Howard books. Rick Remender talks about his creator-owned series from Image and Dark Horse and The Punisher. The legendary Gene Colan tells us about his new Captain America story with Ed Brubaker and the collecting of his reprinted creepy stories. Actor Phil Morris, who plays John Jones, the Martian Manhunter on the CW Smallville. Vertigo editor-in-chief Karen Berger, who talks about the Vertigo line and the new crime novel line that's coming up later this year. Greg Rucka around to talk about Action Comics, Detective Comics, and his own indie work. Matt Fraction will be around to talk about his work on Iron Man, and Daniel Way. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide variety of absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, trade paperbacks, hardcovers, you name it, with discounts of 35% or more off the standard retail price. And shipping is free when your order is $50 or more from InStockTrades.com. A couple of the books we're featuring, Daniel Way writing Supreme Power, the Nighthawk miniseries. The trade paperback standard retail price is $16.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $10.70. How about Teen Titans Volume 9, written by Sean McKeever, the arc that introduces the Terror Titans. It's called On the Clock. The standard retail price, $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $9.44. And from Dark Horse, they've been doing a wonderful job with these creepy hardcover reproductions. Volume 2 features issues 6 through 10, and we're including this one because it features beautiful art from the legendary Gene Colan. The standard retail price, $49.95 at InStockTrades.com, just $32.47. And don't forget about InStock Trades' sister site for your monthly needs, discount comic book service at DCBService.com. If you want details, make sure you check out the websites DCBService.com and InStockTrades.com. Well, if you're interested in seeing the video versions of these interviews, you can head over to Newsarama.com. But this is for my folks on the RSS feed that maybe don't travel as much to Newsarama and sometimes can't find the videos. We got all the audio here, part two of our Tales from the Blue Carpet, right here on Word Balloon. Hi, John Suntress back here for Newsarama at the New York Comic Con, and I'm so pleased that we ran into a great writer from England that has enjoyed success on television and is finding his comic book audience now as well. It's Paul Cornell. It's a pleasure to see you, Paul.
Hello, thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Let me be the millionth person, or probably 100 millionth person, to say how much we loved the Doctor Who episode Father's Day, a classic.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, Captain Britain and MI-13 is a wonderful series. And I know there was a slight internet scare for a little while. I'm glad that that's over. And I think everyone is relieved that the series is doing well enough and hopefully will continue to do well. You're writing a great series. It's P. Wisdom, what a great miniseries that you had. And it's wonderful to build on that with more of these characters.
Well, thank you very much. I'm having a wonderful, wonderful time with it. Leonard Kirk. Having Leonard Kirk things in my inbox every morning, that's what I like.
Hear, hear.
And can I just say, not cancelled. And but thank you so much, everybody who's got behind the title and are putting internet banners and places for forums.
Save Captain Britain.
Absolutely. I love that stuff. I'm not entirely sure that we need saving yet, but it's just nice to have that there. You know, it's
excellent, man. And really, the dynamics of the characters are interesting, too. And forgive me, the surgeon's name, the doctor's name is
Phaser.
Phaser, okay. Phaser's a brand new character, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And her interactions with the Black Knight have been very cool.
Yeah, well, what interactions? There's nothing going on there at all.
Oh, sure.
That's actually the lovely thing, that because Leonard's so good with the drama, with the acting, that I don't have to put anything about those two in dialogue. They just sort of have looks at each other and a certain tension between them, which we're going to have much more of. And it's a pleasure to be able to lean on the art like that. You know, I'm having a wonderful time with this.
That's great, man. And the other great thing I like it too about the title character, Captain Britain himself, it's nice that you are portraying him in the same vein as, say, Captain America here, and that he really is this national hero.
Yes.
And it really seems to have given gravitas to the character that maybe he didn't even have before in his previous versions, but written by other people.
Well, I think that when Chris Claremont first came up with him, that was what he was, the national hero. And I think we're back to that. You know, I just wanted to make a character who wasn't an alcoholic, who wasn't a figure of fun, because he is our national hero and he will be treated as such. Having said that, he's got his drama, you know.
Absolutely.
Him and Meghan is a thing we'll get back to.
Very cool.
And, no, I'm loving it at the moment. Doom and Dracula on the Moon starts happening soon, and, yeah, it's all groovy.
Excellent, and I hope we haven't seen the last of Captain Midland. So I know he let the team down in the previous arc, but, you know.
Absolutely, but he's still alive. He did not take the honourable way out when offered it to him.
Oh, good.
And I do think he handed that gun back to the guard. because otherwise, you know, we'd have to have a whole escapes with one bullet issue, which... That would be complicated.
Have any of these stories been swirling in your head before getting the assignment for Marvel? I mean, is this really just like, great, now I can finally do it?
Yeah, hugely. I had the scene of the flags zooming from every flagpole and wrapping around Cap in my head for about 10 years.
Wow.
And it was just a pleasure to say that to Nick Lowe, my editor, and have him go, oh, yes. And that's what you're after, your 10-year fantasy sequence made flesh. How much more fun can there be?
Well, and not to spoil, but what else can you tell us about things coming up?
The Vampire State arc is 6 issues of Dracula's brain versus Pete Wisdom's brain.
Excellent.
In a spy game, with lots of action, and it's that supernatural Mission Impossible book. It's a huge widescreen thing. We've got Storm in the first issue.
Cool.
Black Knight goes back to Wakanda to get the Ebony Blade back.
Okay.
We've got appearances from ancient Marvel UK characters making cameos.
Wonderful.
We've got Dracula has a couple of other supernatural Marvel foes on his side, and there is continuous action. So it's that blend of character, action, and that espionage, moving pawns and taking pawns thing. And it just gets incredibly... It's the most fun I've ever had on this book. And I'm just having the most incredible time with it.
Excellent, man. You know, I think when we were kids, you had your version of Marvel in the UK. We had ours in the US. Some of ours would come over to you, but very little would come over to us. And it's nice that you are one of these reps that can bring that piece of Marvel back to the wider audience, and I'm really glad that's happening.
Well, thank you. We're determined not to be that UK book. You know, we're not
sure.
That British book. We're hoping to be that supernatural espionage book.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, we're flying the flag.
That's cool. Well, you know, and I'm a big fan of MI5 and Spooks, you know, in the UK. Is that one of your shows? Or?
Oh, hugely, yeah.
Okay.
And having some of that interdepartmental friction, you know, MI5 and MI6 versus MI13, that's where this all starts, because Dracula's got his claws into the British establishment hugely, and it's also doing Dracula. You know, this guy who's been started out as a great general a couple of centuries ago.
Certainly.
And has had nothing but 200 years of tactical experience. I think the whole run of Tomb of Dracula under Marv Wolfman, which is one of my favourite comics,
absolutely,
it's all Dracula on the back foot. He keeps Dracula being harried, pushed from place to place for that vast and wonderful run. This is Dracula having had, because of all the different, because of Secret Invasion, because of Civil War, having had a couple of years to plan and regroup. This is Dracula the Great General with his hugely worked out plan, which he's putting in motion. That's what I'm enjoying most.
That's excellent, man. Well, we're on for the ride, so good luck, continued success on that. Paul Cornell, folks, Captain Britain and MI13, enjoy it as I do. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
John Suntress back here for Newsarama.com and Word Balloon, and very happy to run into one of my faves. You all know him and love him from his Teen Titans work.
I'm not Jeff Johns.
Oh, then you're not one of my faves. I'm sorry. Sean McKeever, I don't know. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Fantastic, man. Excited about the crossover of Teen Titans and Titans. So they're giving you the big toys and the teen toys?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. It's the coolest thing about it is getting to work with Marv Wolfman. I wouldn't be doing these books if not for the things he did in the 80s. So that's pretty exciting. And it's actually been pretty fun to work with him as well. He's a pretty good collaborator. And yeah, I'm writing the Teen Titans and the Titans chapter. So it's 3 of the 5 chapters of Death Trap. We've got Jericho, who's going a little bit batty. And he's got some bad plans that involve bad things for the Titans and the Teen Titans and for Vigilante.
Excellent. Hey, of the classic Titans, the Wolfman Titans, who's been fun to write?
So far, I think my favorite to write has been Beast Boy. He kind of has that goofy quality that's, you know, a lot like Red Devil and a lot like Blue Beetle. He's kind of fun to write. I've also really enjoyed writing Red Arrow, actually, in issue 11, which is my first issue. It's not part of the crossover. I'm writing 11, 12, and 13 okay. of Titans. And issue 11 is a downtime issue. And so I got to do some interesting things with Roy and really with all the characters. I was really intimidated to work on it at all, but I just eased right into it, and it felt oddly like I was at home, even though those aren't characters that I grew up with necessarily.
I understand. Well, you've always shown that with things like Gravity, you've got a handle on teen characters, so it's cool to see you playing with the DC toys now. I was wondering of the Teen Titans that you deal with in your regular book, who do you enjoy hanging with?
Oh, Wonder Girl's great.
Sure.
And like I mentioned before, Red Devil and Blue Beetle, I love writing those two together.
Excellent.
They're a couple of big nerds. And there's a third big nerd going to join the team, Static. And so that's going to be fun.
Yeah, you know, that's really cool. And I'm really glad that DC has kind of widened and included the Milestorm guys and really integrated them in the proper DC universe. And Dwayne has had his moment with them in Justice League, Dwayne McDuffie, the creator. But now Sean gets to play with the toys, just like he got to play with Gravity.
Well, you know, yeah, but Dwayne gets to lord over me with Static is the difference.
Okay.
And that's fine, though, because I want Static to sound and act authentic.
Consistent,
and so it's
sure.
great to know that Dwayne's there watching over me and smacking me around when I do something wrong. And I wanted Static to be on the team from the very get-go when I started the book. I said that was the only change I had to make. Could we add Static? And obviously there were legal reasons. And then I met Dwayne and talked to him, and he said, yeah, that'd be great, but, you know, can't
sure.
exactly do it right now, but we're talking. And so now, finally, Static in the DCU, which is really cool.
Yeah, and it'll be fun seeing him in the Titan mix. That'll be great. Eddie Barrow's joining you on the book. That's got to be cool.
Oh, Eddie's going. Eddie's leaving for action.
So who? I'm
Joe
sorry.
Bennett.
Joe Bennett is coming on the book. All right.
Joe Bennett's hopping over from Terror Titans onto Teen Titans, starting with issue 70, which is part of the crossover. And I'm really excited about that because I can't wait for people to see this last issue of Terror Titans he's put out. Like, just in those six issues. I mean, he's always been a great artist. And I worked with him back in, gosh, like 2001 on The Incredible Hulk, you know,
cool.
and he was amazing then. But even just within these six issues, he's just blown up, and he's gonna, you know, he's gonna be even more of a household name than he is already, I think, with Teen Titans.
Well, I'm hoping down the line that Dan DiDio, in his right mind, will do the good thing and put him, Sean, back with his old pal Mike Norden. He cries to sleep. I gotta call him on the phone and say, don't worry, it'll happen soon. And I hope my imitation is actually true and it'll really happen.
Yeah, you know, we keep trying to make it happen. And so far, you know, I mean, Mike's busy with Green Arrow, Black Canary,
sure.
and with Trinity.
Yes.
But I think that, you know, it'll eventually happen. There's a possibility that you will see a McKeever Norton team up outside of DC Comics.
Okay.
We're still both exclusive, but we got an okay for something that I can't announce yet.
Okay, we won't tell. We promise we won't tell. Now, and you know, and I'll say it right this time, The Waiting Place is a fine independent book that Mike and Sean did way back when.
That's a good segue.
And there you go. Why? What's coming up with The Waiting Place? Is it just in fine, is it still in print, still available?
It is still available through SLG. We do have some plans for it. I can't really announce it yet.
Oh, okay. Wow, I stumbled onto something. Who knew? That's great.
But I'm not saying that has anything to do with what I said before about working with Mike outside of DC.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well,
and
dude,
I didn't say it's not that either.
No, never. Enjoy. Why don't we zoom in on Sean's incredible shirt as we close? Because not only is it a Star Wars shirt, but it's an Al Williamson drawn Star Wars shirt. So that's even cooler, comic fans. But here he is, the man behind the Teen Titans. It's Sean McKeever. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
And keep watching Newsarama.com for more video from here, the New York Comic Con. John Sutcher's back here for Newsarama.com at the New York Comic Con, and so happy to spend a moment with a great Dark Horse editor. If it's a big book from Dark Horse, you're almost guaranteed that Scott Alley is editing it, and it's very nice to see him. It's a pleasure to see you, Scott.
Thanks, John.
We're standing in front of Buffy, and congratulations. The run has been great. All the Buffy fans, not only comic Buffy fans, but non-comic Buffy fans I know are running to the stores because of the consistency of the story. And that's always a great thing to see with a franchise book. And that happens a lot with Dark Horse, with all the franchises, but it's nice to see with Buffy as well.
Thank you. Thanks.
You've had great writers, obviously, for the series, and that's certainly contributed to it. And I know that Stephen DeKnight just wrapped up his issue. That's the current issue.
The one that just came out, yeah. Stephen DeKnight.
And Jane Epperson did the previous issue?
Yeah, Jane wrote issue 21, which came out the first week of January, and Jane will be back for issues 26 through 30.
Oh, that's great. Is there going to be a wrap to the season and then a break and then coming back? How are things mapped out?
Exactly. The plan has been to go to issue 40. It's possible that we'll end sooner than 40, but the plan was to go to issue 40, wrap up this storyline with a big conclusion, and then we'd break for a little while and come back with season 9.
Excellent. We'll see Josh come back to a story, or Joss rather, come back to a story before the end?
Yeah, Joss will write something before the end.
Cool. And enjoyed Loeb's issue that incorporated a lot of the ideas that were going to happen in the Buffy animated series, and that was fun to see.
Yeah, and I believe it included a good chunk of a script from the animated that I think the fans knew about, that Jeff had let out a little information about. So that issue was based on an actual episode of the animated, but framed in the flashback idea with Buffy.
Let's switch. Oh, and you've got a book coming out, Tales of the Vampires, and a one-shot?
Yeah, we just announced that yesterday or the day before. That's coming out in June. That'll give us a month off for season 8 so that Georges can catch his breath and we can get going. Tales of the Vampires was something that we did. It was Joss's idea years ago to do Tales of the Slayers, mm-hmm. Where he worked with a bunch of writers from the show and other writers that he knew well, to do a bunch of short stories about Slayers over the years. And then we did a companion book, Tales of the Vampires, also overseen by Joss. And so I thought it would be a great thing to catch up with the world of the vampires now that everything has changed for them in season 8, now that we've seen them go mainstream and become accepted in society. I wanted to do a story that kind of showed what the world's like from their perspective right now. And so it's a Tales of the Vampires story in the tradition of those other books, but set in the current, milieu of season 8.
Very cool. The Frey crossover was great. Fun to see Joss's original character for Dark Horse Comics and part of the Buffy story finally interact with Buffy. That was a wonderful thing. And the Dracula reappearance was fantastic.
Yeah. Frey was the first comic that Joss had ever written, ever published, so we always wanted to get her back. We always wanted to do more with her, with the original artist, Carl, and making it part of season 8 was just a no-brainer from the get-go. That was one of the first things that Joss suggested we do.
Let's switch gears and talk about the Robert Howard universe, for lack of a better word, and Solomon Kane that you're writing yourself, great stuff, and again, very consistent to the original book and the character, and the toughest pilgrim you'll never want to meet, I guess.
Yeah, he's a great character. He's a lot of fun. The fifth issue is done and just about to come out. With that story, with any of the Howard stuff, the goal has been to make it very faithful, but make it accessible to a modern audience. And with Castle of the Devil, I felt like the best way to keep it consistent with Howard, but accessible, was to take a fragment. Castle of the Devil is written by Howard. It's only like 3 pages of dialogue, basically. He never finished the story. He never really gives you an indication of where it's going to go. But I felt like if I could adapt that, expand on it, being true to Howard, but given a story that would be a good intro to the character, that was the best way to start the series. And, some of the feedback on it was that assumed that all I was doing was copying the Howard story, and none of those people went back to look and see that Howard only wrote the first couple pages of it.
Well, and I got to mention Conan, obviously, and one of my favorite artists is also one of my favorite writers, Tim Truman.
Yeah.
And Tim's doing a great job, and the Conan run continues to be the high quality that it's been since you guys debuted.
Yeah, Tim's doing great, and a special issue that's coming up. For issue 14, we had Joe Kubert said he wanted to do some interiors for Conan. So, but he's really busy, so he had a very small window. So what we're doing is we have an issue that's written by Tim and roughly half drawn by Tim and the other half drawn by Joe.
Wow.
So the student and the teacher get back together again.
That's excellent.
Yeah,
man.
It's going to be exciting.
Two beautiful artists and really perfect fits for Conan. And, the covers that he did, the cover that he did for you for Solomon Kane was outstanding.
Yeah, it was great.
I love Adam and Andy, but really for me, Joe Sr., he's the man. So very cool, man. Congratulations. Continued success with Buffy, the Howard Universe, and Tales of the Vampires, and really great stuff, Scott, as always, from Dark Horse. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
Hey, John Sutcher's back for Newsarama and WordBalloon.com, where, ladies and gentlemen, we are here talking with one of my favorites. I know one of Pete's favorites as well. He's a great writer. He's done a lot of wonderful original work and is also doing great work for Dark Horse and Marvel. It's Rick Remender. Rick, good to see you.
Good to see you, Joe. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. And let me tell you.
Don't lie to the people. What's going on with you?
Well, not much, man. Well, you know, my back hurts a little bit, but other than that, I'm okay. But enough about me.
Yeah.
Punisher War Journal.
Yeah.
Nice going. And now it's really, it's number one again, and now starting
Punisher,
up. And it's just Punisher now. Punisher. So, yes. So, tell us about the new direction for the book.
The new direction is basically, well, the Dark Reign, as you know, it sets such a great stage for Frank Castle and people of his ilk because. The only thing that stops Frank Castle is the size of the weapon you give Frank Castle. So, you know, I think it was Fraction or Axel or somebody had, and I was trying to get my head into, like, how to really, you know, get the character, was if Galactus comes down from the sky and lands in New York, everybody runs. Frank Castle, all he wants is a bigger gun. And when you get in your mind around that, that he's the Terminator, that this guy is not, there's no human left. He's insane. He's just, and I love writing him from that standpoint. Like, he's a force of nature, basically, a bad force of nature. So with the Dark Reign, with that stage, it's perfect for Frank. And if you've read issue two, or when you do, we just gave Frank a box of toys, which answered that question. Like, well, wait, what do you do when you give Frank Castle, say, a bunch of Pym particles in Ant-Man's helmet? just Frank Castle, you know. Does he infiltrate a base, riding in on like a, you know, pizza being delivered and blow up out of somebody's head, or, you know, what? There's so many amazing things you can do with Frank once he's got this, and because of everything as bad as it is, Frank being a street level guy with nothing to lose, he's going after big guys.
Absolutely.
And now he's got the weapons to do it, which is just endless fun.
And big guys that now have the government behind them and everything as well. I mean, you know, with Norman running things,
right. Yep.
And all of his supervillains kind of posing as heroes. And Frank's one of those guys that obviously knows who's a real hero and who's a real villain. So
right. Yep.
Even better. So yeah, it's an even bigger target.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
And getting to work with my Fear Agent artist Jerome Pena on that is a treat. I mean,
excellent.
It's great because it was you know, there's nerves when you get your first Marvel number one. You want to knock it out of the park, and being able to work with Jerome, somebody who I've been working with for so many years. Who needed more people to recognize. You know, in 2003, he wins the Russ Manning Award for most talented newcomer, and then he goes to video games, and he starts making all this money.
Real money, exactly.
Ooh, I make money. And I was like, that money is not what you want. You want to do comic books. So I pulled him back into the comics industry, and I'm glad that people have just been you know, going nuts over his stuff on Punisher, and it's great.
Well, I'm glad you came as well from the game industry back to comics as well, because are books, as we said, not just Punisher, but also Fear Agent, which is doing great, and I'm really glad that it's found this home at Dark Horse, because it was always one of my favorite Image books. Now it's one of my favorite Dark Horse books, and you've got wonderful collections, and, you know, what is the status of upcoming stuff for Fear Agent?
Fear Agent right now, the current arc ends in, we got two more issues coming out. And then we've got one more five-issue arc that's going to wrap up. The initial pitch when I wrote it was 33 pages.
Okay.
And that's what it's broken down to. And it's crazy how, like, a seven-page story, an outline, came out to 33 entire issues. You know, you write, somebody goes to Earth, finds aliens, just, you know, discovers at the core of the Earth, there's, you know, that's five issues, basically. So I'm finally getting to the end of that, and then we're going to take a hiatus.
Okay.
Give it a little break, and then the film stuff is still, you know, in the process
Good.
Of talks. And then, we've been doing it for 5 years at this point, so it'll be nice to take a break and focus on some other things for a little while.
As I always say on my podcast, if you're a classic sci-fi fan and haven't experienced Fear Agent, it is the book you've been looking for, because it evokes those memories of Wally Wood and that great EC kind of sci-fi stuff. And, you know, guys like Jerome, Rick, and Tony Moore have been able to put the modern spin on it as well. And I look forward to the Fear Agent movie, but I'm very happy there are so many volumes of Fear Agent books. Moving on to the End League. And what's going on with that? We're kind of in the middle of the story right now.
We're in the, yeah. And Eric Canetti and I are having a ton of fun. When you see Eric's next two issues, it's going to be like, they're legendary amazing. They're gorgeous. Just, like, scary. I've cut half the dialogue because I'm like, you know what? It's too good. I can't cover any. I can't put words on this. That'll go till issue 8, and then we've got one more giant size that'll round out the current arc,
okay. And
then hiatus on that for a little while, but it ends the story in a place where we can come back to it, and we plan on it, but so that'll be the summer as well, so kind of a, you know, taking them both and getting a nice completed story and getting them both to an end point where we can then take a break and then, you know, take a breath, basically, and involved in them for a while.
Very cool. And I know Gigantic, it's great because I know it's been flying off the shelves at my local comic book stores, and I'm glad it's flying off the shelves here at the con. So that's kind of cool.
The Gigantic is a wonderful surprise because it's basically Fear Agent for Ultraman and Godzilla fans, you know? It's the same sort of like taking a modern story sensibility and then mixing it with the aesthetic of something that we all love. Like, hey, there's a giant guy who looks like Ultraman and Godzilla stomping through a city.
So it's been, can't go it's wrong. Been,
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I think it's all about finding those aesthetics and those things that are like, maybe they're part of pop culture and we all love them, but there has been maybe a deficit of quality. And I'm not, you know, making a broad generalization, but I'm saying in terms of like, you know, what you saw as a kid and that stuff, it was more the idea of these things than actually the execution ever was. So I'm hoping to, you know, I hope I'm infusing it with a nice story. And, you know,
I think you are. So
if nothing else, Eric Nguyen's art is beautiful. So
excellent.
I got that.
Brett Blevins' art, very beautiful on Legion of the Supernatural. And as I was telling you, it was great to see him on the commentary for a Disney film, Dr. Sin and the Scarecrow of Romney Marsh. And you're very lucky to be working with him, and I think that's great.
Yeah, no, Brett's amazing. He absolutely, you know, and it's funny you mentioned that, because those pages were the reason that, and I've been a friend of Brett's and a fan of his forever. And when I saw those pages and I was reminded just what an amazing painter he is, I begged him. I'm like, you got to come back to comics and show everybody, you know, like, let's take this, let's do a giant monster thing with all the, you know, kind of faux versions of the Universal characters, and he loved it. Unfortunately, there's been some health issues in his family that he's been dealing with, and so hopefully when everything's solved and everybody's happy and healthy, he'll be able to come back and we can jump back on the book.
Very cool, man. Listen, you know, I remember a year or two ago, Matt Fraction kind of came from his Image background and hit Marvel, is starting to kind of get the word going on with him. I hope the same kind of success happens for you with Punisher. Again, there's wonderful books here from Dark Horse and Image that Rick has done through the years, and it's hopefully knowledgeable fans certainly are aware of those books, and maybe now Punisher fans will be exposed to Rick and even more projects coming down the line, and find more great stuff from Rick Remender, who I'm happy to talk to and happy to see, as always.
It's great to see you, John.
Good seeing you, man. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
John Sutcher's back on the floor here at the New York Comic Con, and look who I ran into, somebody that talks to me when he feels like it. It's Brian Michael Bendis. How are you, buddy?
Hi, look at us. Isn't it? It's like Word Balloon, but disturbing, because now you can see us.
I know.
It's not as appealing as you might have thought of when you're listening in your car.
A much gentler product when you hear us rather than see us, definitely. I know you got big announcements this weekend. Now, I knew Spider-Man was coming. We've been talking about, or Spider-Woman has been coming.
Yes.
We've been talking about it for years, but the motion comic is happening.
Yes, this is Marvel's first in-continuity, ongoing motion comic, which is a damn big deal. It's also the first ongoing motion comic that is being created as a motion comic, not just taking existing material and wiggling it around. You know, so this is, we're creating the comic and the print comic at the same time and trying to find the new language of that medium as we go forth. And I think like Stephen King's End was a very good example of some emotion and some, you know, dread and feel that could be produced out of the material. And we're going to find something different, but something like that out of Spider-Woman. So,
is it tougher to write for this format as opposed to the traditional static comic book? I mean, motion or anything in consideration in terms of what you're writing as far as story?
It's a challenge, and it's not animation and it's not a comic book. It's this other thing. I know some people get confused by that. Like, anything that wiggles must be animation. It's not. There's something else happening here digitally. And what we're trying to do is find what that language is. So it's everything feels new. It's a great feeling to have, you know, whatever, you know, safety net you can create for yourself as a creator is completely out the window. Because me and Alex have been making comics for almost 10 years together.
Sure.
We're in a great place to do this because we know a lot of shorthand about ourselves, but here's something else we haven't done before. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find out what that language is and what that emotion is. How do you connect an emotional connection to the reader with it instead of them just going, oh, look, she blinked. You know, it's got to mean something else. So
will it be at the Marvel site? Where will it be as far as distribution?
They're going to talk about that later today. iTunes is involved. Marvel.com is involved. I don't have the exact knowledge of that, but it will. You know, I think Vanetta or someone will have that for you somewhere on this thing.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to find out about it. All right, I'm sure we'll have more details on Newsarama. I want to talk about Dark Reign, though. Obviously, we're in the midst of it now.
Yes. very dark and it's very rainy.
Well, and it's great because it's a great way to revisit classic Avenger moments in this new arena. I mean, certainly the big Publica moment of Norman introducing the new team evokes memories of Avengers 16 or 17 when Cap had the new crew and everything.
It's like I've taken those memories and I've molested them.
You crushed them.
Yes.
Oh my, what have you done to my Avengers?
Exactly. Yes. I'm going back into your childhood and slapping you.
Yes.
No, what's going to happen now is now that both New Avengers and Dark Avengers are up and running, you're going to see a nice little tension between the two as one makes one move and they make another move. And New Avengers 50, which is all done and put together, gorgeous, as I told you on the podcast.
Big jam session.
Brian Hitch handed in what I honestly think is one of the best pieces of artwork he's done since Ultimates. And everybody, it looks great, but that's a big issue between the two teams. But as the year goes on, the reign of Norman and what he does, whether you like it or not, and maybe some of the things he does, you go, wow, you know, I don't like the guy, but that was pretty good. Those kind of things are going to go on.
Oh, okay.
And what will the Avengers' reaction will be? Will people like Luke Cage and Clint Barton be able to handle it? Well, you know, as we talked about on the podcast, you know, Peter Parker is a very specific kind of guy who could take a slap in the face every day and keep going. Not everyone can do that.
Sure.
Maybe Luke Cage can't handle it, you know? So it's going to be interesting to watch the two teams push and pull on each other and who ends up on one side and what have you.
So we'll see some real heroic actions from Norman Osborn, maybe by design for some other master plan, or maybe some truly working for the good.
What I'm very interested in, what this really opens up for all the writers who are working on it, and I think what you've already seen is a lot of writers go gung-ho into it, which I found very flattering, because the idea to me that was very cool was the concept of hero and villain. It's very it doesn't, you know, it's not all black and white as it used to be, even in the real world. Everything's got shades. Everyone looks at things a different way. And to apply that to the icons of the Marvel Universe is very intriguing. And it has all kinds of new story ideas that doesn't, you know, fly in the face of everything we knew about the character. I mean, so far we're all in character, but just new things are happening that you have to argue. You know, I love these arguments online about it. I love that even with Civil War we started that, the debate is a much higher level of debate. Now we're talking about what is a hero, what is a villain, what's a hero to some people is a villain to other. No one sees himself as a villain. Nobody goes, I'm a bad guy, you know? And if you see yourself as a bad guy, you're pretty much out. You're 1 foot out the door as it is.
Sure.
So there you go.
Okay. Everyone's the hero of their own story, and everyone thinks they're doing things for the right reasons and everything.
Absolutely.
Read Secret Warriors last night. Great job. I'm going to talk to John
where
more about
he?
That
he's
in depth.
Right there.
John's
he's
getting
right
ready
there.
For a sign.
That
you can
guy.
See John Hickman right over there.
He's right there.
Who did a wonderful job on Secret Warriors 1, and Brian is involved with that as well. But we'll wrap up. I know you're going to be talking to the Sky Box later.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
I think this Principal weekend. Suntress has been in there, so I hope he comes back.
It's canceled.
Really? Is that?
Well, it did. I had a feeling that you were the kiss of death. I put you in the book, and my book got canceled. So I think, yes, you are the comic kiss of death.
Well, sorry, kids.
Yes.
I know you liked it. It was a good run.
God damn you. No. So if you want, I know you got some of people upset.
I'm the guy.
Right there. That's the guy.
I'm sorry about that.
Son
All right.
Son of a bitch.
Well, have a good con. It was great seeing you, my man.
Are you allowed to say son of a bitch on
Instagram? You just did.
All right.
It's cable, baby. It's the internet.
Do you guys have beep technology? Can you beep things? No? Oh, I want to swear so badly now. He just nodded no.
The Bendis tapes is the place you can hear him swear to his heart's content. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Add your own dialogue there, Brian Michael Bendis. Thanks a lot, pal.
You got it, brother.
John Suchus here from Newsarama at the New York Comic Con, and very pleased to have a moment to speak with really a legend. From DC Comics, ladies and gentlemen, it's Adam Austin. But it really is, because that was his pen name back in the 50s for DC. And then, of course, we all got to know him better as the great Gene Colan. It's a pleasure to see you, sir.
Thank you very much.
How are you feeling? I have to ask you.
I'm feeling very good.
Excellent.
Excellent.
I know all the fans are, you know, concerned, so it's great to see you out.
Yeah, I'm alive.
I understand. Good fan show up so far at your table?
Pardon me?
Have you had a nice show up as far as fans
wonderful.
At the table?
Wonderful.
Excellent.
Wonderful turnout, yes.
Very cool.
Yes.
I know before you got sick, I know there were some plans of some Marvel work, and I was wondering if any of that is still going to come
well,
through.
I just finished a 36-page Captain America.
Wonderful. And Ed Brubaker is
writing
that?
Yeah, he wrote it. Yeah.
That's great.
It was a great experience. Took a long time to do because of the illness, but
sure.
I finally got it all done.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the publication of it. Around July, sometime in July, I think.
Fantastic. Well, that's great, because we're always happy to hear about new art from Gene Colan. And are they taking your pencils directly and just coloring them?
That's right. They're taking the pencils, they're reproducing it from pencil, and then they're coloring it.
That's terrific. I go back to some of your books from the 70s and 80s that, you know, occasionally you had wonderful inkers like Tom Palmer on Tomb of Dracula, of course.
Yes.
But some guys, it seemed like sometimes the color almost, you know, would obliterate some of your wonderful lines.
That's right. There's always sometimes a problem with that. But if I have a chance to speak to the colorist, it helps. I don't always have that opportunity. So whatever they do, they should know what they're doing. So they generally turn out a pretty good job.
You refer to your style as painting with pencils.
Painting with pencils, yeah. That's my best. I don't like people... I don't like inking over my work, because then you've got two people on the same job. And my work always shows up. The artist that started to do it should finish doing it. It should be published that way. There was a time when you couldn't publish in pencil. It just wouldn't show up.
Right.
But they've improved on the printing process. And it's very sophisticated now. They can print anything.
It's a pleasure to see some of your old work come back from Dark Horse in the creepy and eerie collections that they're putting out.
Yes, I enjoy. Well, it's a wonderful thing that the publishers allowed me to do it, because so much of the work is still inked. In my case, I was fortunate enough for them to print my work up in pencil. It shows off the best.
It sure does. And I'm glad to see your table. There's some great examples here of Gene's work, and some new prints as well that I think are fantastic. I highly am pleased that I was able to get a wonderful portrait of Blade that you did for me a few years ago.
Thank you.
And it's like I said, great to see you up and active, and best of luck with your health and everything that's going on. And I encourage people to come to your website, which is GeneColanArt.com.
That's my wife. I forgot.
Is it GeneColanArt.com?
GeneColan.com.
Just GeneColan.com. Fantastic. And you'll see some of the wonderful...
Short.
Well, you'll see some great hero sketches there, but also some of Gene's non-comic work, and I encourage you to go, because really, this is a fine artist, and he really, when he's given the opportunity to kind of just express himself in any subject, the work really shows through. It's beautiful stuff, sir.
Thank you. It's a great interview.
Well, it's a pleasure seeing you.
Thank you.
Phil Morris, the fine actor, here at the New York Comic Con. Now, you might know him as Jackie Childs from The Seinfeld Show. You also might know him recently from his great turn on Smallville as John Jones.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Yeah, I love playing John Jones. You know, I'm a rank-and-file comic book fan myself, so getting the role of John Jones was really an honor, and I hope the fans like what I'm doing with it. I love him.
I think they do, because it's a traditional John Jones portrayal. You're a policeman, and it's great. And also, I like this kind of mentor role that you've got for Clark.
Yeah, I like that. You know, they came to me with that, and I was all for it. You know, they lost a lot of their patriarchs in John Glover and John Schneider and stuff. So I came in to kind of ballast that out, and it's been really wonderful. Tom Welling is one of the nicest guys and finest actors I've worked with in my career, so I'm really happy to be doing that show.
We're hearing 50-50 for a season 9. I don't know if you've heard more since.
I think it's more like, you know, 70-30 in favor of another season. They haven't told me yet, but our numbers are holding up. In fact, they're exceeding some of the numbers of the past recent years.
Sure.
And I think the fans really like that, you know, Oliver Queen is in it. They brought Black Canary into it, myself, and we're getting Superman and Clark to be what we know he becomes, and I think they need to get there, and that'll be exciting for everybody.
We've seen a little action from you, and we've seen scenes with you with some of the other heroes. Mm-hmm. We're getting closer and closer to that Justice League core. Is there more to come?
I hope so. They don't tell me, and especially they don't tell me because I am a fan, and I would absolutely bust the information out right now. We would all know it. So they know they shouldn't tell me. But yeah, they're weaving it very nicely, and hopefully they'll integrate us all, and the next season will be more of a Metropolis mix than a Smallville mix.
That sounds great. I want to talk to you about your film coming up, because it's wonderful to see it represented on your T-shirt, Black Lightning.
Black Dynamite. Black Dynamite is a film starring Michael Jai White, myself, Byron Mins, Tommy Davidson. It's a throwback homage to the Blaxploitation 70s. Michael plays a composite character, Jim Kelly, Jim Brown, Fred Williamson. I play Saheed the Militant. You know, every Blaxploitation film needs a militant.
Absolutely.
I play him. It's a really rollicking good time. We just sold it at Sundance. Sony Pictures bought it. So we should hopefully do a few of those movies, franchise the movies, and I think it'll be out around summertime. I think that's what they're they're planning.
That's excellent. Hey, I'd love to have you back on to talk about Black Diamond when it's close to release.
Yeah, absolutely. We have another project called Emissary that I created with Decker Dreyer, and we're here promoting it at the con. That's why I'm here.
Okay, what's Emissary
it's a
about?
It's a web series based on a man named Campbell Essex. It's a sci-fi action adventure. Think of it like Bourne Identity meets Indiana Jones.
Very cool.
He's an anthropologist who is the next in a line of the selective breeding genetically superior human beings, and he doesn't know it. It all comes upon him, you know, unbeknownst to him, and he's being followed and pursued by this dark, negative, nefarious faction called the Plague. Brian Thompson from Cobra and X-Files, he plays my nemesis.
Cool.
Teo Pengelis plays my rival, professional rival, who we also did Mission Impossible together.
And, awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
So we're back together again, and it's just, I think the fans are going to love it. You know, I'm a comic book fan, obviously. I'm a martial artist, full stop. I've been a martial artist my whole life.
Outstanding.
I get a chance to show all that, so I'm excited about it.
That's fantastic,
yeah.
Man. You know, and it's great to see an actor that is in the genre, that is truly a fan of genre pictures and things like the Blaxploitation films and, of course, sci-fi. Your great turn on Voyager.
Thank you.
That was a wonderful episode.
Yeah.
And, of course, Smallville's own John Jones. It's Phil Morris, ladies and gentlemen. Where's the Emissary going to be online?
We don't know quite yet. We think it's going to air the fall. We're still putting it all together. It came up very, very quickly, and the interest has just been kind of over-revving our ability to develop it, which is a good thing, but a very nervous thing. And we're just really excited about it. So
good luck with that.
Thank you so much, John.
And we'll be watching for the press releases for that and
guys.
Where to find it. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Phil. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Man, we go back to Mission Impossible watching this guy. It's Phil Morris. Thanks a lot for watching. And keep watching here for our coverage at the New York Comic Con from Newsarama. John Sutris back here for Newsarama.com and Word Balloon here at the New York Comic Con, and very pleased for the first time to be able to speak with Karen Berger, who I have been an admirer of since the Swamp Thing days when you were editing, but now, of course, the caretaker of the Vertigo line and has been guiding the ship incredibly so for well over 10 years. Is it 15 years?
It's 15 years.
Wow.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
And the stalwarts like Hellblazer and 100 Bullets that are wrapping up are now joined by new projects like Air. And certainly one of my personal favorites, Jason Aaron's Scalped, which is such a unique book. And then, of course, the hallmark of Vertigo, you guys have changed the face of comics. You truly have. And I believe that so many of the competitors, as I'm sure you're well aware of, are all trying to catch up to you.
They have been for years, yeah. But thanks for, you know, thanks for your compliments. And it's you know, it's really working with the best talent in the industry and writers and artists who've always wanted to push the envelope. In comics, to show that comics is a medium that can be reckoned with, like contemporary fiction, like indie film, and to really do alternative out there stuff that really says on the end of the day, but also really provokes your comfort level.
There have been great crime and suspense books from Vertigo for many years and horror books, but it's so nice to see you now with projects like Air from G. Willow Wilson.
I
know you do, and it's a great, unique book and a new dimension for Vertigo as well. So tell us about why you love Air.
I love Air because it's really different from the rest of the line, and I think what we always try to do at Vertigo, especially in the monthlies, is try to come up with a different flavor for each type of book. And people used to pigeonhole us in the old days at being dark horror and fantasy, but I think we've expanded our genres, our topics, our contributors. We're always looking for new talent, you know, new voices. And what's so cool about Air is that it's a book that people who don't read comics, I think, could really get into. There's a great blend of magical realism to it, a great blend of history, of science fiction, of adventure, of romance, and it's just got some cool stuff and so accessible and you know, it is a breath of fresh air, I think, you know, in terms of what we normally do.
So sorry to see one of the founding Vertigo books wrap up, or I guess not really founding, but I guess 100 Bullets.
It's not founding, but it's in the mid-founding.
The second big wave.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Brian and Eduardo always knew that it was going to be a 100-issue storyline, and they stretched it out a little, you know, which is fine. I, you know, keep it going. That's okay. No, in terms of the monthly aspect,
sure.
That's okay. But it's, you know, it's a phenomenal series, and what's so cool about 100 Bullets is that, you know, that series really did, show that you could do modern noir crime comics, very street level. I mean, obviously,
absolutely,
Frank Miller did that with Sin City, but his was more fashioned on a real pulp sensibility.
Certainly, where, a classic sense, yes.
A classic sense, where I think what Brian did is really do it from a different, you know, a modern sensibility.
Yeah.
And it's just really, you know, I'm really proud to have published that for so many issues. And the fact that they've written, you know, same writer, same artist, same cover artist for 100 issues is, there are a handful of titles.
And I'm hearing rumors that that isn't the last we're going to see of this team of Russo and Brian?
No, they have a number of creator-owned books that they have pitched to us. They're all
good.
Wonderful. So we're ready to get started as soon as they are. Eduardo needs to have a little vacation after this.
Here, here.
After 100 issues. But, but yes, yeah.
Some series that have come and gone recently. Love the Exterminators. Loved Loveless.
Yes.
And glad Milligan is back to Hellblazer.
I'm thrilled. Obviously, Pete Milligan is one of the founding writers of the imprint.
Yes.
And, you know, he's always kind of breezed in and breezed out over the years. But he's been away for a while after Human Target. And we're thrilled to have him back. Doing not only Hellblazer, which is, you know, the longest running Vertigo title and pre-Vertigo title, but the fact that actually Pete's the only British writer that we've worked with that's never written Constantine too.
Oh wow!
So that's a cool thing.
Absolutely! You know, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, which is great.
And
his new and Greek Street, which is a new monthly, which really shows, the core of what, the breadth of what Vertigo can do in terms of the inspiration from Greek classics to modern themes that resonate over time in terms of humanity, in terms of murder and sex and passion and family relationships. It's got it all, and it's a remarkable book.
As you said, too, about AIR and bringing in non-comic readers to comic books, very excited about the original graphic novels that you're planning in the crime line. And I know Brian Azzarello has a book that's going to be one of the first ones to come out with
that. Exactly.
And looking forward, too, to Ian Rankin, one of my favorite mystery novelists.
So
that's going to be great, seeing him do a comic book. And it sounds like the design is going to almost be really catered to the book market first, as opposed to the comic market, who already do love guys like Brian.
But right, and we figured, you know, with the interest in crime in the bookstores and also with our readers, we figured this is sort of just another natural extension for Vertigo to travel in. And so many of our writers wanted to explore this area, so we figured, hey, you know, graphic novels, people are, you know, your average person is realizing what a graphic novel is. Let's go to the genre people, because they tend to be loyalists to a genre, and they'll tend to test things out instead of going real mainstream. So, we've got some great graphic novels in the crime line. We're going to be announcing a few more at the panel this afternoon.
Very cool.
And and our original graphic novels as well, too. You know, that's an area that DC has always felt is so important to really explore and to really expand. And I'm happy to say that we are. And it's an exciting time for me, having been working at DC forever, to finally be at a place where, you know, you can do monthly comics and on DC characters and original series, and do original graphic novels and do different formats and tell different types of stories in different formats. And the fact that more and more people are aware of what we're doing is just really cool.
It's the combination of great writers and artists that you've loved with new talent as well. And really, again, Vertigo is the vanguard of innovation in comics. And it's because of this woman, Karen Berger, who's been running the ship and doing a great job. Thanks so much for talking with us, and congratulations.
My pleasure. Great to meet you.
Thank you. And keep watching Newsarama.com for more video from right here, the New York Comic Con. John Sutris here for WordBalloon.com and, of course, Newsarama.com, live at the New York Comic Con with my pal. We're in the bear cave right now with the bear himself. It's Greg Rucka. Greg.
We're in the bear cave, and yet Diana looms overhead.
Appropriately so.
Yeah, well, she should.
And a fine turn on that book, and excited about your turn coming up. Finally, Kathy Kane.
Yes.
Kate Kane.
Yes.
That woman. In Detective.
June, Detective 854.
Outstanding.
Batwoman, Detective Comics.
Terrific. And, dude, I loved your run originally on Batman in Detective. And that's when Detective was once again a true mystery book and a detective book, a procedural book.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we're going to get the same with the different characters. It's certainly a bit different story.
It's actually going to be a different slice of the pie. I mean, it would be foolish to try to catch that lightning again.
Okay.
It's J.H. Williams III on art.
Very
it's
cool.
Todd Klein on letters. It's Dave Stewart on the colors. this book is going to look and feel unlike anything else on the stands. I mean, in all sincerity, nobody's seen anything like this. And the character is different. And that's important, you know. It's Batwoman. It's not Batman.
Right.
And she's got a different MO. She's got a different mission. It's similar. It's not the same. Batman's looking to stop crime. Kate's looking to eradicate evil.
Okay.
And she has a very intimate. She's had a very intimate look at what evil is. So first four issues, introductory arc. We introduce her. At work, you see how she does what she does, you see who she's got to back her up, and we introduce her first real big villain. And that leads to the origin arc, which is our second one. It's three issues after that, and you will see why she does what she does, how she came to be who she is. So, yeah, only about 3 years late by the time it comes out, but we'll finally be answering the questions.
We've gotten hints down the road in terms of her background, her relationship to people like Renee Montoya, now the question. And we've seen her in a supporting role in 52 and in the Crime Bible book as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess you're going to explain how this intruder into the Bat world now fits into Gotham and the Batman mythos, or her own thing.
Well, how she got there. Yeah. And you slap a bat on and you're part of the mythos. So the question is, what do you bring to it? Why is she there, and why does she deserve to be there?
Yes.
And those are all valid questions. I mean, cool. There are fans going, look, so far all we've seen is another redhead with a red bat, and you've told us she's gay. And it's like, yeah. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, yes, she's gay. She's also a redhead. It is relevant to the character only in so much as it's part of the character.
Sure.
It's not the agenda. And there's some real, it is more than fair to say, why should we care? So, you know, Jim and I are very serious about telling you why you should care. We're going to show you.
That's great, man. And it's adult relationships handled with care, I think, is a hallmark of your writing. And we've seen it in a lot of books, from Queen and Country to your run on Detective with Batman. Yeah. And, you know, it's going to be fun to see now.
I figure the audience is smarter than me at any given moment. It's better to respect them than to talk down to them. So that's just me trying to keep a job, dude.
And action, you're back in the Superman world, but without Superman, and now Nightwing and Flamebird, or I should say Flamebird and Nightwing.
Yes. It is technically Nightwing and Flamebird. It's okay. Nightwing is supposed to be the lead.
Okay.
But, yeah, and then you do get Superman over on World of New Krypton that I'm doing with Robinson.
Right.
And that Pete Woods is drawing. But Eddie Barrows is drawing action.
Okay.
And it's hard to talk about it because I don't want to give spoilers.
Okay.
Flamebird and Nightwing, their identity will be revealed in March in the first issue. I don't waste any time about it because that's, to me, not what it's about. What it's about is who are these people and what are they doing remotely trying to follow a Superman legacy? Why and how? And how they relate. And, Lois is a part of it. Fans of Donner's work will be pleased to see that Ursa is big part of it. And I'm loving writing her. I'm loving writing Zod over in World of New Krypton. I love the character. The more you think about him, the cooler he gets.
And tell me about, because your Superman in particular was a very street-level Superman, a very Metropolis Superman.
Yeah, so that's got my editor's chagrin, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and I'm curious to see the science fiction side of Greg Rucka now playing in the world of New Krypton.
Well, I mean, you will see it. One of the things that we want to do in New Krypton is that you're going to get a vision of what Krypton is, because we have this community that now has this planet. There's a world. And Cal doesn't know it. Cal's seen it in pictures and he's watched it on documentaries. He's never experienced it. And there is an element of culture shock, but there's also that longing. This is part of him. This is who he is. And yet he's also, you know, he's now quite literally a man of two worlds.
Absolutely.
And frankly, as you'll see in the Superman books, he doesn't quite fit in either.
An outsider in two worlds.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
We have made him liminal, as the professors would say.
Well, as you said, you can't hurt Superman with bullets, but you can break his heart.
Yeah.
And you're one of the guys that cuts to the chase with that, with your characterization of Superman. And you're with good guys in James and Greg and Sterling as well, James, as far as the writers.
James is just he's so great to work with, and he's got such wonderful ideas and such almost a sense of whimsy. And I need that, because otherwise I'll sit there and I'll spend all my time on the street going, no, no, what's in this gutter? What's under here? And he'll be like, no, space, stars, thought beasts. And I'm like, oh, thought beasts, that's good. What do thought beasts eat? And he'll be like, no, thought beasts, Greg, thought beasts. So it's good. It's very exciting.
Excellent, man. Let's move to Oni. Yes. You know, I know that Stumptown has been long in the works. It will soon be in color.
Yes.
And will be coming out at some point this year.
We're shooting for summer. We're shooting to have it out by San Diego. I just, I burnt myself pretty badly on Queen and Country. I got myself overworked, and I got myself into a place where people were waiting 6, 7, 8 months between issues. And I was really, I'm not proud of that. And I don't want to do that again. The plan with Stumptown from the start was that once we have the arcs completed, we will solicit.
Great.
Not until the arc is completed.
That's fantastic, man.
So we're shooting to have the arc completed very soon, and then we'll solicit the first four.
Excellent. And for those of you who haven't tried Queen and Country, you're missing one of the greatest spy books, both in novel form and in comic form. Is it the Queen Essential collection?
No, it's they call them the Definitives.
Ah, the Definitives.
The Definitive Editions. We have 1, 2, 3 of them, volumes 1, 2, 3, which cover the run of Queen and Country and include the script book for the
Very
first
cool.
four issues.
Cool.
And then volume 4 is forthcoming, and that's going to have all the declassifieds.
Okay.
And then at the end of that, there's going to be transcripts of interviews. I went back and I did interviews with some advice from somebody on the other side of this mic, where we did audio. I did audio interviews with Steve Ralston and Brian Hurt, and I'm slated to do Mike Norton sure. and Anthony Johnston, and then we're going to include the transcripts, and then I suspect we'll make the audio available on the website at Oni. But that way, I figured we could have a little retrospective and talk to different people about their experiences on it, and that's good for me because normally people are asking me about it. This was me going, so. How much of a pain in the ass was I to work with and things like that?
Well, and the other great thing, too, is the novels, both the Queen and Country novels, which include A Gentleman's Game
and
Private Wars.
Private Wars, and the one that I'm starting work on now, which will be out next year, is going to be the bridging book. That'll bridge Queen and Country Series 1 with Queen and Country Series 2,
okay.
which hopefully will launch late 2010, early 2011.
And I'm sad to see one of my favorite bodyguards might be wrapping up things.
Yeah, that may be the last Atticus Kodiak novel.
Wow. It's called Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's April 28th in fine and not so fine bookstores everywhere.
Excellent.
From Bantam, yep.
And Greg, I appreciate your time today, but I think you can guarantee that you and I will be talking on the phone about all of these projects.
Forward to that.
Thank you very much. Greg Rucka, folks, from DC Comics and Oni Press.
Thanks for listening.
And Fine Novels. And make sure you stick around to Newsarama.com for more video from right here at New York Comic Con.
Right here.
Wow, we just had like a Carpenter's album moment. It's John Sutris back for Newsarama.com. And WordBalloon.com. And we could be like Hall & Oates. Not really. Unless like they really went to hell as far as their weight and stuff like that. But it's me and my one of my favorites from Marvel. It's writer Matt Fraction. Young
hey,
Matt, it's a
going?
Pleasure to see you.
And you, sir. How are you?
Always a pleasure. I'm doing fine.
Good.
You know, you made a big splash with the Iron Man solo book, Invincible Iron Man, last year. And now the story takes a big change with Dark Reign. Tony has the target on his back more than ever.
Yeah.
And is really a hero on the run or a fugitive on the run.
Yeah, after being king of the world and sort of, you know, running the show, we wanted to take all that stuff away and make Tony have to fight for what he believed in. And at the same time, you know, rob him of his intellect, rob him of what really makes him who he is. So as he's getting dumber and forgetting how to work these incredible machines that would save his life, he's on the run. And every camera in the world, every ATM machine is looking for him. Every traffic camera is looking for him. Every satellite. It's very hard to be Tony Stark. And it's just going to get harder as the year goes on.
And especially now that Norman seems to have control over whatever technology he did have.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like Norman is like putting his Oscorp stuff, so it doesn't, you know, it's like when Microsoft would reverse engineer something and not make it quite as good, but kind of figure out about 90% of it.
All right.
So it's not quite comparable. It's comparable enough, you know, a nuclear bomb in a briefcase or a suitcase. I don't want either one going off in my backyard, but you know. Yeah, it's going to be very... Tony has a very, very hard year ahead of him.
Well, and it's been a joy reading the book so far, and you hit the ground running, and it was great to see the symmetry of the book match with the movie. I mean, you know, I know you only had a limited exposure to what they were doing.
Yeah, it was blind, dumb luck. You know, I wrote the book that I wanted to read. I had four scripts in the can before the movie came out. You know what I mean? So I was just writing the book that I wanted to read and the book that I hoped would match the film, and got really lucky.
And since they've taken you into conference for the sequel?
Yeah. I was out there for like a week talking about Iron Man 2. And it was really exciting. Jon Favreau really has a vision and a clarity and a precision. And Justin Theroux, the screenwriter, there's no lack of love for Iron Man in the room. And that I was there kind of getting to workshop the idea was really great.
Excellent.
It's going to be a hell of a movie.
Looking forward to it, and enjoying the work at Uncanny X-Men.
Awesome.
And an interesting turn now, also tying into Dark Reign. A couple things going on. First of all, Emma, part of the Cabal.
Yeah.
And really, you know, we'll find out where her allegiances lie eventually.
Yeah.
But that's going to be fun to play with.
Yeah, you know, we had, you know, Scott made his sort of Faustian pact when he sanctioned X-Force. You know, there are less than 200 mutants left, and there are a lot of people in the world that want to drop that number down to zero. And when Scott made the decision to meet Lethal Force with Lethal Force, with this particular group of people, he sold a little part of his soul. Or at least he put a little part of his soul in Hawk. And he's keeping secrets from Emma. And Emma knows it, and so Emma's doing what she thinks is necessary, which is the most powerful man in the world came and said, there's a seat for you at this table. And she took it. Emma's always been about protecting mutant kind and, you know, teaching the children. And if you look at her character consistently throughout the years, so... Given the opportunity to do that, she took it. And she doesn't know what Scott's up to. Scott doesn't know what she's up to. And you've seen the sitcoms. Lies don't help when you have to cover the lies with more lies. Wacky hijinks ensues and a big downer ending.
Excellent. And, you know, someone on the last Bendis tapes mentioned to me, they wrote in and said, you know, Wolverine seems to be in two places at once, being part of the new Avengers and also part of the X-Men, and is a guy that hasn't registered.
What? You just gave us the ad campaign. It'll be whose side is he on?
Exactly.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's gonna. He's gonna have to decide. Is he gonna dance with the girl who uprung him, or is he stepping out with someone new? It's all coming to a head. It's exciting. Brian and I are really working on twisting the kind of the twin families of the Marvel U together again. So X-Men and Avengers are really going to be that sort of the two kind of cores of the Marvel U, and kind of making it a double helix of.
There you go.
Oh, something. I don't know. But anyway, there's a lot of interplay, and we talk a lot, and so there's a lot of back and forth there.
Excellent, man. You got a long con ahead of you, man, and I know you've been talking a lot, so I appreciate your moments. Dance, Bear, dance!
Yeah, I got that yesterday. Yeah,
and
yeah.
And so let's start working on some new voices for the next Word Balloon.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll do Hall & Oates. We should actually just do Hall & Oates.
So look forward to Private Eyes and I Can't Go For That and more fine hits from No Can Do. Matt Fraction from Marvel Comics. Thanks, my man. John Suntress here for Newsarama back at the New York Comic Con, and look who I just ran into. I had to, like, tackle him to stop for a second and tell him how great Deadpool is going.
Thank you.
The writer Daniel Way. Daniel, good to see you.
Good to see you too, John. Thank you.
And no kidding, man. I swear, like I was saying before the cameras were rolling, we were talking upstairs how great the series started off. And a couple months ago, I was speaking to Brian Bendis, and I really enjoyed your involvement in Secret Invasion, and I thought it was a great opportunity to showcase Deadpool in this story.
I think absolutely, and that's why when that opportunity came up, we jumped at it with everything, you know. And we built like almost the first year of stories around that incident, and it just made for a great beginning for that issue. And it really kind of, you know, characters are elevated by the company they keep, you know. So Deadpool knocking around with like the number one bad guy was, you know, we couldn't have asked for anything more. And it turned out great. Everybody on the book did great. And yeah, I was very happy with it.
Well, and I think this is the answer back when people are concerned about events and how other books involve themselves in them.
Right.
Because Deadpool was very much the hero of his story involving
right.
Secret Invasion.
And yet he still blew it. Yeah, he still turned out to be the bad guy. Yeah.
But that's consistent, and that's great.
Right.
You know, hey, what did you have a chance to see the Hulk Wolverine cartoon?
No, I've not seen it yet.
They do a pretty good job on Deadpool as well, I hear.
I think I might, now that I, was that what they were showing at San Diego last year? That little clip?
You know, I didn't see that. I've seen the DVD since it's come out.
I think I saw the Deadpool clip.
Okay, cool.
And more important, most importantly, I saw the fan reaction when he came up, and I was like, okay, this is good. We're in good shape. You know?
That's excellent. And also, it shows a different side of your writing as well, because of the kind of free, breezy character that Deadpool is.
Yeah, that's it's the cool part about writing the character is literally all the rules, none of the rules apply. So you can really throw a lot of the stuff out the window. So when you're crafting the stories, I really do have to kind of throw convention to the wind, because you know, why limit yourself when there's absolutely no need to? So it's just been really, really, really cool. You know, especially working on Origins, which is so research intensive.
Sure.
And then as soon as I finish off one of those scripts, I'm like, okay, let's do Deadpool. And I just I just let it kind of go. And then usually the scripts when they're done are, you know, over 30 pages. And then I'm like, all right, that's just too ridiculous. And then just kind of scale it back until we get, you know, an issue.
Well, we don't want to spoil, but what can you tell us about? Well, let's go into Wolverine Origins. What's coming up in Wolverine Origins?
Really big things. The Weapon 11 storyline is going to be, and this kind of ties into some announcements that are going to be made here at the show today. But the Weapon 11 storyline really sets up really the final confrontation, or this kind of triangle between Wolverine, Dokken, and Romulus. And it's really cool to finally be able to really get that, you know, the big story in motion, now that we've moved all the small pieces around.
Okay.
So big things are in store. And Doug Braithwaite.
Awesome.
About to meet in like a couple of minutes for the first time. So
Doug's an amazing artist, so congratulations on
that. Man, I was pretty happy.
And down the road for Deadpool, what can we say?
Let's see. After Magnum Opus is coming out now, or I don't even know what's coming out now. And then after that is Bullseye story.
Oh, great!
The three-part Deadpool versus Bullseye, this will be kind of the bookend to the Norman Osborn story. It'll all kind of come to a just completely heinous conclusion in that story arc. A lot of people have been asking me, you know, in interviews running up to this, you know, how would Wolverine feel about this? You know, his son running around as Wolverine.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that what he's going to do is use it. Is that because to the public at large, or to a lot of the superhuman community, that really is Wolverine.
Sure.
They don't know any different. And Norman Osborn is going to great lengths to cover this subterfuge. So this allows Wolverine to go completely sub rosa. And that's
where he operates
that's
best,
perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
That's great, Dan. You know, I'm really happy that, like I said, I think Deadpool's had a great start. And it sounds like a lot of things that are happening in the Marvel Universe are only going to help bring along Wolverine Origins and continue to make that twist and turn.
You know, raises all ships. So,
well, glad your ship is up there. So that's great, man. Good seeing you, and continued success.
Thanks, man. It's a pleasure.
Well, that'll wrap up another session of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Today's episode was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide variety of Absolute Editions, Omnibus Editions, Essentials, trade paperbacks, hardcovers, you name it, with discounts of 35% or more off the standard retail price. And shipping is free when your order is $50 or more from InStockTrades.com. A couple of the books we're featuring, Daniel Way writing Supreme Power, the Nighthawk miniseries. The trade paperback standard retail price is $16.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $10.70. How about Teen Titans Volume 9, written by Sean McKeever, the arc that introduces the Terror Titans. It's called On the Clock. The standard retail price, $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $9.44. And from Dark Horse, they've been doing a wonderful job with these creepy hardcover reproductions. Volume 2 features issues 6 through 10, and we're including this one because it features beautiful art from the legendary Gene Colan. The standard retail price, $49.95 at InStockTrades.com, just $32.47. And don't forget about InStockTrades' sister site for your monthly needs, discount comic book service at DCBService.com. If you want details, make sure you check out the websites DCBService.com and InStockTrades.com. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you that more episodes are coming up from Word Balloon. I will be at WonderCon. Make sure you stop by and say hello. I'll be wandering. Also, featuring a Cursed Pirate Girl issue 0, the Ashcan issue, will be given away at WonderCon. And there's a Word Balloon interview in there or two that I hope you'll enjoy. We'll be talking to Jeremy Bastian at WonderCon along with other creators, and I'll bring you a full report in the days ahead. But also, I've got a couple interviews in the can. One's with some fellow podcasters. I never get a chance to talk to the guys on air, and I felt after talking to the guys from Comic Book Club Live that it would be nice to talk to my buddies from iFanboy and my buddy Augie DeBleek from Comic Book Resources and the Pipeline Podcast. So be listening for those interviews coming up in the days ahead. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2009, all rights reserved.